We are holding on Mem Zion on the day of the talk. Okay, we learned that we talked in the Mishnah about various cases where a child is a Bechor, but he's potter from Pidyon HaBen, or vice versa. In the course of that, we talked about the case where you have a Kohen's or a Levi's son, or we talked about also yesterday, we talked about a Bas Levi or a Bas Kohen, if she has a child, that the fact that he's potter. So now, a related topic. We've learned already in the Masechta that Kohenim are potter from the financial aspects of the dinim of Bechor. So when it comes to a Petah Chamor, they can keep the sheep that would be the pidyon of it for themselves. Similarly, when it comes to a Bechor Behema Tahora, they keep it for themselves. And pidyon Aben is a similar idea. That if a Kohen has a son, so I mean, if the son himself is a Kohen or a Levi, then he's anyway potter from pidyon Aben. But now we're going to talk about a case where the son in and of himself should be chayiv in pidyon Aben, but the father, being a Kohen, doesn't have to do it on account of he himself is a Kohen. So Itmar, we have a discussion. Kohen shemes v'hiniach ben cholol. If a Kohen died and left over a son who's a cholol, then Zion on the base. And Zion on the day is the top. Yeah. Okay, but it's now Kohen Shemes V'Niach Ben Cholo. If a Kohen died and left behind a son who was a Cholo, so the Kohen had married a Grusha or what have you, and his son is a Cholo. Now, a Cholo is not a Kohen. He's considered like a Yisrael. He himself would be Chayiv in the Dinim of Bechorah. So the question is he Chayiv in Gideon Aben?
He's a kosher Jew, though.
He's a kosher Jew, fine, but he's a Cholo. It means, in particular, if he marries a woman the Gemara in Kedushin discusses it and concludes, he himself is a cholol, he can't serve in the Bais Mikdash, but if he marries a regular Jewish woman, then fine, their children are, if they have a daughter, she's kosher to marry a kohen. But he...
Halalim, children?
No. The sons would be halalim. The daughter would be able to marry a kohen. She herself, for having married the halal and having had relations with him, the wife herself will be considered a halal. So if he later on dies, for example, his widow can't marry a kohen because she's a halala, but those are the implications of it. A halal is, his sons are halalim as well. His daughters are not considered halalas, but his wife is a halala. Okay.
Is there halalim for all generations?
In the male line, yeah. Okay. Anyway, the point is over here, the Cholol himself is being a Yisrael, he's Chayiv and Pidyon HaBen, but his father is a Kohen. So what's the din? Rav Chista Omer HaBen Chayiv Lifteis Et Atzmo. Rav Chista says the son is going to be Chayiv to arrange for his own Pidyon HaBen when he grows up. Rav Barav Huna Omer Ein Chayiv Lifteis Et Atzmo. Rav Barav Huna says he's not. So let's explain the machlok. This kol hecha de mesa av la'achas shloshim. If the father died when the son was 30 days or old or older, which is when the chiyuv of pidyon haben kicks in, so then the kol ha'amalei pidyon de'en haben chayev lifted to that. Then everybody will agree that even Rav Chista, that the son does not have to be poyed to himself. Share zocha aviv pidyona, because the father was already zocha in the pidyon. In other words, what would have happened? Suppose you did need to do a pidyon haben for the son, because he is a Yisrael after all. The kohen wouldn't have had to find another kohen to give the five shloim to. He could keep it for himself. Same thing.
He's on
son. No, to himself. For his own son, yeah, but he could keep it to himself, for himself. Same principle as the Kohen keeps the sheep for his own Petah Chamor. Same principle as the Kohen keeps his own Bechor Behemah Tahora. Same principle would be over here that the five shloim would anyway belong to him. So the father was zocheh in it, and therefore, okay, when the son inherits him, he inherits that along with the rest of the property. By the way, you have the Some of the Mephoshim understand the implication of Rashi over here to be saying, the Rosh also says such a thing, that it does mean the father in a case like this would be obligated to set aside the five shloim, just that then he can keep it for himself. On the other hand, you have some Rishonim who he has to designate them, but then he can keep them for himself. Similar to a Petah Chamor, where the Kohen has to designate a sheep for the pidyon, but then he can keep the sheep himself. Tosfos, on the other hand, over here says that there's no chiyuv at all to set aside the five shloim in that case. Anyway, the point is, if the father of this cholol died after the baby was 30 days old or older, and he hadn't done a pidyon aben, there's no question that the son doesn't have a chiyuv to be poured to himself. The machlokas is, the tune of Chista and Rav Bar Rav Huna is if the father died during the first 30 days of the baby's lifetime. So the chiyuv, it's a pidyon aben, didn't kick in yet. Rav Chista Omer aben chayev lifted the bat. So Rav Chista says, well, therefore the son is going to have to eventually be paid to himself. The whole is zocha aviv l'pidyon, because the father had not yet been zocha in that money. Because and then there's no question. We just said that. We just said that. We said that the Kohen himself was already zocha in the five Sforim. Yes. But
in general, that is?
No. In this case over here, again, if the child is a Kohen, there's nothing to talk about anyway. Pidyon aben is not necessary. Here the child is a Yisrael. He's a Chol.
Yeah.
The father is a Kohen. But we're saying if the father, once 30 days passed, then the father himself is zocha in the five Sforim. And therefore, he bequeaths that to his son. But if the father dies within the 30 days before the pidyon aben could have taken place, so then, Rav Chista Amar Ben Chayev lifted the bat. Rav Chista says the son is going to have to be paid to himself. The whole zocha of the pidyon, because after all, the father, you can't say the father was zocha in the pidyon yet, because the time for pidyon aben didn't come yet. The time is after 30 days. Rav Barav Huna Amar Ein Ben Chayev lifted the bat. Rav Barav Huna will say the son is not. Even in that case, the son doesn't have to be paid to himself. The Amar Lei, because if the Kohen comes to the son, If a different Kohen comes to the son, the Scholo, and says to him, Nu, you are aware you're a Bechor, you're a Yisrael, aren't you supposed to be doing a pidyon aben? Where's the five Sforim? He can tell him, the Amalei can tell him, I don't have to pay it to you because Asina Mikoyach Gavra, I am coming from the power on the meaning of that my father was, Gavra, was a person, where you would not have been able to take him to Beis Din for such a thing. Meaning, in other words, the son can say, look, if my father had done the pidyon aben, he could have kept it for himself. So therefore, I come from his koyach. So therefore, you have no right to demand the pidyon aben from me. That's Rav Bar Rav Huna's position. Whereas Rav Chista will say, fine, granted, you have that concept maybe, but the fact of the matter is, the father himself was not yet zocher in that pidyon, and therefore the son is going to have to arrange it. Because the 30 days hadn't passed yet, right? Okay, so the Gemara says Tanan. Let's look at our Mishnah and see which opinion our Mishnah fits with better. The Mishnah had given a case, Miss Gaira Mubera, a woman, a goita was pregnant, and then she became a Giyotis while she was pregnant. We said that child that she gives birth to, if it's her first child, Bechor Lakoyan. We said that he's considered a Bechor as far as Pidyon Aben. Now, the question is, Amai, now why should he be considered to be a Bechor as far as Pidyon Aben, according to Rav Bar Rav Huna's logic? Leimale, why shouldn't he be able to tell the Kohen the same way? I come from the power of a person, a Goy, who you wouldn't have been able to take the base into this, because he's not going to listen to the mitzvah anyway. He wasn't going to be doing a Pidyon Aben for me. So if we see that, nevertheless, that doesn't work, and nevertheless, there's still a mitzvah of pidyon aben on the son, then the same thing should apply to a son of a Kohen who is a cholo, where the son is a cholo. The answer is shiny. Yes, but the difference is, when it comes to the father being a goy, you can say that there's no yichus over there. Relative to a Yisrael, there's no yichus over there. A little bit similar to what we were discussing yesterday about mezamin or a mezamin of a blot. Do we look at the father's lineage at all and considering what the child's lineage is? Do we say that he's kosher? Do we say that he's a mamzer, etc.? But relative to a Yisrael, there's no yichus over here. So therefore, again, this child who is converting along with his mother is to cotton shenou. Gershon is guy for cotton shenou dummy. He has no relationship lahalacha with his goyish father. So therefore, you can't say that I'm coming from the koyach of a person, etc. Whereas in the case of a cholo and a koyan, he's still his father's son. His father did an aveda by marrying a grusha or what have you, but there's still a yichus over there. He still is his father's son. And therefore, Rav Bar Rav Huna will say that's different. Therefore, he has the ability to say that idea that a sin in the koyach gavra. But not when he's the son of a goy where his mother converted while pregnant. More on this topic.
That's according to
Rav Bar Rav Huna. So Rav Bar Rav Huna is not contradicted from the Mishnah because the Mishnah is talking about a case where the father was a goy. The Mishnah is not addressing a case where the father was a kohen and the child was a chol. Amr of Shimon Yassinya said in the name of Rav Shimon Lakish. Yassinya probably means it's probably named after the place he came from. Whatever it is, anyway, he says, also in this connection, Kohen Shemetz B'Seich Shloshim, if a Kohen dies within 30 days after the baby is born, V'niach Ben Cholol, and he leaves behind a son who is a Cholol, HaBen Chayev Lifket B'Tatmo, he says, like Rav Chista, that the son does have to arrange for his Kidyon HaBen when he gets older, Shaloi Zocha Ab Pidyon, because during those first 30 days, the father had not yet been Zocha in the Pidyon, because again, it's within 30 days.
What do we have?
Because we said we had Rav Chista and Rav Shita, and we had Rav Chista versus Rabbi Bar Avuna, we wouldn't know. Now we have another opinion like Rav Chista. Mes la'acha shloshim yarim, but if the father dies when the baby is 30 days old or older, ein ben chayav lifetat, right? Then the son does not have to be part of himself. Sharei zocha av pidyonah, because once 30 days come, once the 30th day comes, then the father is zocha in the pidyon himself. And therefore, now he doesn't have to. So he agrees with Rav Chista, and that indeed is the halacha, like Rav Chista. So if the father dies after 30 days, then the son is potter. But if he dies within 30 days, then the son is in fact chayav. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, v'chein mishalei shasa achrei baile dimo chadashim. We said the last case of the Mishnah was, we had a number of cases where you have a child who is a bechor lekoyin, but not bechor lenachla. One example we had was when a woman remarries, not having waited the proper amount of time after her first husband died or divorced her. Now she has a baby in less than 3 months, right? And now we have a suffix, therefore she has a baby in the 7th month, and we're not sure if it's from her first husband or her second husband. So we said that child is a bechor lekoyin, because one way or the other, he is her bechor, whichever husband it came from. But on the other hand, he's not a bechor lenachla, because each one, the heirs of each of those two husbands, hers can say he's not my son, he's not our father's son, whatever. Therefore, he doesn't get a double portion. So the question is, what does that mean? Bechor lenachla hu delo havi. Does that imply that he's not? So you say, what are you saying? He's not a bechor as far as nachla. Hakaposhu shakul. So what are you telling me? He does get a portion like a regular son from the nechassim of one or the other. Damai. Now why? Leza lagabe hai velitchiyev lagabe hai velitchiyev. Don't you have the same issue? Whichever one he goes to. So you have the woman was married first to Reuben, then she's married to Shimon. We don't know, therefore, if this child is Reuben's son or Shimon's son. So now, forget about Bechorah. Even when he just comes to Yashin a regular portion, as if he's not a Bechorah. Fine, if he goes to Reuben's heirs, they're going to say, bring proof that you're Reuben's heir. If he goes to Shimon, to Yashin, same thing. Bring proof you're Shimon's heir. What is the Mishnah telling us he's not a Bechorah L'Nachla, implying that he's a Poshut as far as Nachla? He's neither here nor there. He doesn't get anything, it sounds like. The answer is Amar Rav Yirmiya, lo nitzrucha ela l'ba'achor. So Rav Yirmiya says, you're right. The Mishnah is not telling us about the child himself. You're right. The child himself, who we're not sure of his paternity, you're right. He's not going to get a Yerusha from either one. But the Hachi Ka'ama, what the Mishnah means, though, says Rav Yirmiya, is the Bechor L'Koyin, this child is still considered a Bechor L'Koyin, as far as Pidyon HaBen, because again, regardless whether Reuven or Shimon was his father, either way, he is Keter Rechon from this woman, because she hadn't previously had children. But the point the Mishnah wants to say is, but the next child that comes after him, you should know, is not a Bechor L'Nachla. In other words, you're right. This one is not only not a Bechor L'Nachla, he's not anything as far as Nachla, but the next child after him is, we don't say that the next child after him is a Bechor L'Nachla, because you have the same concern. So now you have, okay, so obviously there's no other children from Reuven, because, well, let's just suppose that Reuven died, then there's no other children from Reuven. You have other children from Shimon. The next child that this woman has with Shimon is not going to be a Bechor L'Nachla either. We're not going to say, yeah, but he might be Shimon's first, because on the other hand, he might not. He might be Shimon's second.
He's not,
so therefore, for sure, he's Shimon's son. The second child is definitely Shimon's son. So one way or the other, he's getting a nachla, but he's not a bechor l'nachla. That's the point. When the Mishnah says that he is not the bechor l'nachla, the point is not the first child where we're not sure if he's from Reuven or Shimon, because you're right, he's not getting a share in the inheritance at all. But you might argue, okay, well, if he's not getting a share in Shimon's inheritance at all, then doesn't that in effect mean that we're saying the next child is Shimon's first and he should get a double portion? We're saying no, nevertheless, because after all, there is that topic. Maybe he is Shimon's. Maybe the first child is Shimon's first. He's losing on both ends, indeed. That's how it is.
So the first one is losing on both ends.
So the first one is losing on both ends. The second one is definitely yaushining Shimon, but he's not yaushining as a Bechor, because he may or may not be a Bechor. That's the thing.
So
he just yaushins as a Poshut, as a regular child. Because we don't know. Because we don't know if it's the first or the second child. For sure he's not a Bechor L'Koyah. Now, there's no Chiddush in that. The Chiddush is he's not a Bechor L'Machla from Shimon. We don't say, but we're taking the first child out of the picture. He's not Yashin and Shimon at all. Therefore, by default, this one, second one is the Bechor of Shimon. No, we don't say that. Okay, but the question is, still, why don't we say that he could? The Lichtiv Uhav Sha'olah Adadi. Why don't we do this? So, again, there were two husbands, Reuven and Shimon. Now you have these two children. You have first, let's use the names of Reuven's children from Chumash, Chanoich and Palin. So Chanoich was born first, and we don't know whether he's Reuven's son or Shimon's son. Next, you have Palu, who we know is Shimon's son, but we don't know whether he's the first or the second. Why don't we still have a way that they can accomplish that there can be a double portion given to the Bechor for one of them? The Lichtavu HaShalah Davi, because what they should be able to do is they should be able to write a HaShal, which means a power of attorney, one to the other. So one of them will write a power of attorney to the other. And saying basically that each one will write a hashah on his chelet, and then what he'll do is, so now a hashah is a power of attorney. So meaning, in other words, that I'm giving you the right, like this normally, for example, if Chanoich were to come to Beis Din and try to argue that, and then try to argue on behalf, and try to argue that there should be a Bechor for Palu, then the other brothers, Chetzrin and Tami, whatever, could say, look, you're not our Baal Din. You have no dog in this fight. You have no standing to sue over here. Go away. But if they write a Hashah for each other, so now he can say, either I'm doing it on my own, or I'm doing it as under power of attorney from my brother. So let him be able to do that. Let Chanoch and Palu write a Hashah one to the other, where now, therefore, either one can come and say a double portion from Shimon's property needs to be given to somebody. Either Chanoch or Palu is the Bechor. You're saying you're not sure which is which. Fine, but Chanoch has written a Hashah to Palu and vice versa. So therefore, now, when Chanoch takes them to Beis Din, either he gets the double portion because he himself is the Bechor, or he's getting it on behalf of Palu, who he represents with power of attorney, with a Hashah. And then, fine, a double portion of Bechor will be given. And fine, Chanoch and Palu will split it between themselves. So why can't they do that? He's going to answer, okay, but our Mishnah is not talking about cases involving powers of attorney. Our Mishnah is talking about straight out whether Chanoch or Palu themselves are entitled to this double portion. But no, later Mishnah in our Perek, we say we explain that a later Mishnah in our Perek is to Bahar Shah. That there's later on we have a Mishnah on Memches on the day where you have a case. Where you have a case where one of them writes a hashah to the other, fine. But the Gemara regularly assumes that all mishnayos in one perek that are on one topic form a continuum. That's why we often call them even the resha and the sefer, even when it's in different parts of the same perek. So therefore, if later on we have to be talking about, we're going to establish that there's a case when they're coming to hashah. So we should assume our mishnah should also be talking about that case also. So then, in that case, go back to the question: why can't they write a hashah and then Chanoich can take the other heirs of Shimon to Beis Din and say one way or the other, either I'm the Bechor and I get the double portion, or I'm representing Palu, who is the real Bechor, and he gets the double portion, and one way or the other, a double portion will be given. The answer is Messiah Leilat of Yamai. The answer is we can't do that because the fact that the Mishnah doesn't give that as a possibility supports what Rabbi Yanai says. The Amr Rabbi Yanai, it depends. If you have, for example, you have two children where originally we knew which one was which, so we knew that this one is Reuven's son, this one is Shimon's son, and later on there was a mix-up and we lost track which one is which one, then the din is, you're right, Kosman Hashah Zelazeh. Then they're able to write a Hashah one to the other, and they're able to do that. One of them can then take the other one to Beis Din and say one way or the other, I'm suing you either on my own, either for myself or on behalf of the one who gave me the Hashah. Hukla means originally they were recognized. We knew that... that we knew, let's say, yeah, we knew, for example, that one was Reuben's son and one was Shimon's son, and one is a Bechor and one is not, let's say, yeah. So okay. On the other hand, but if they were never known specifically which one was which, like in this case over here, we don't know, because to begin with, as soon as the child is born, we right away have the suffix whether he's Reuben's son or Shimon's son. Then the din is ein kaisven hashah zelozeh. Then the din is we don't say that they can write a hashah to one another, because the whole concept of a hashah is basically we're saying he was a potential heir, but now okay we lost track whether he's who he's a potential heir of. So fine. So there is the possibility that he is an heir over here. So you can write a hashah on that, because at least there was a period of time when he was when it was known that he's going to be an heir, that he was going to be a bechor. But on the other hand, if it was never known from the moment he was born, we never knew whether he's a Bechor or whose son he is or whatever, then there's no room for writing a Hashah, because what are you writing a Hashah on? There's no reason even to say that we don't even have any, there was never any period of time when we could have said, yes, you are an heir of Pliny, such that you would have,
if there was such a time,
then you could. Now, Rashi learns over here that we're talking about not just as far as the chelik b'chur, but even as far as the chelik poshut. So when we're saying, when we're talking about chanoich and palu writing a hashah one to the other, and the Gemara is saying that you can't in this case because we don't know which one is Reuben, we don't know with chanoich whether he's Reuben's son or not. So Rashi learns that what it means is we can't even say that chanoich can write a hashah to palu, never mind even on the chelik b'chur, even on the chelik poshut you can't. For the same reason, because we don't know, and vice versa. On the other hand, most of the Rishonim understand that no. When it comes to the Chelik Poshut, when it comes to his potential share as a regular heir, as a regular son, sure, he can write a Hashah even if it was never a Huku, even if we never knew to begin with which one is which's son. But only when it comes to Chelik Bechorda, then you have this difference of Huku of a certain Arvu versus not. Because by Bechorah, you have a special situation. Since the pasuk says Yakir, then it means that by Bechorah, you need that extra detail. You need that at one time it was Hukru and only later. You need to be sure. One, if there was a mix-up later on, then you can write a Harsha on Chelik Bechorah as well. But if there was Loy Hukru, the Sotnes Avu, if it was never known to begin with, as soon as he was born, we didn't know already at that time whether he's a Bechorah, then he can still write a Hashah on his Chelik Poshut. He can still write a Hashah in case I'm a regular heir over here, then I'm entitled to a single portion of the estate, but he can't write a Hashah on the Chelik Bechor. Whereas Rashi learns over here that he can't write a Hashah on either one. Okay. The Halacha is like most of the Rishonim, so it's only the Chelik Bechor that you have that distinction, whether Hukru or not. With the Chelik Poshut, there's no such distinction. Even if, as soon as the birth took place, we already had a suffix, like in the case of our Mishnah, he can still write a Hashah, he can still write a power of attorney, and give the other guy the ability to go and sue in Beit Din for Chelik Poshut, for a regular share of the inheritance. Although, with that said, by the way, the Gemara does have an expression someplace else, maybe in Gittin, I don't remember. The Gemara is actually, I think we're going to have it in Erchin actually as well, that the Gemara is critical of somebody who's Baba Hashah. The Gemara is critical of somebody who comes with such a power of attorney and goes and sues and bases him for something that may or may not be his, because basically, why is he getting involved in something that doesn't necessarily have to do with him? Okay, there may be a difference in this case because of the suffix, whether he himself is chayev or not, versus though you could also have a hashah, you could also have a power of attorney where he for sure has no standing to sue, and the only reason he has is because of hashah. Right, so this isn't necessarily quite the same thing. I'm saying you have that concept of Bob Hashah is not such a good thing, but not necessarily would that apply. Here, because he has a possible claim. Okay, so far we've talked about cases where a child is a Bechor L'Koyen but not Bechor L'Nachla, and vice versa. Now let's talk about the other two possibilities. You have a child can be a Bechor L'Nachla and L'Koyen, and a child can be not either one. Now, I mean, obviously we can, you don't need scenarios for those last two. I mean, it's fairly obvious. You can have a firstborn child where there was no previous birth of any kind or miscarriage or whatever is a Bechor L'Nachla and L'Koyen, and a second child obviously is not. But you know, the Mishnah is going to point out that you have like edge cases. You have cases where you have something unusual took place and then yeah. Okay. So Ezo Bechor L'Nachla L'Koyen, what is an example of a child who's a Bechor L'Nachla and L'Koyen? So Hamakkala Shvir, suppose that a woman miscarried, this is her first birth, and she miscarries a Shvir, which as we've said before means the actual skin of the child. But instead of there being a child there, Mole Mayim, it's full of liquid, full of water, or Mole Dam, or it's full of blood, or Mole Gninin, or it's full of Gninim, which Rashi says means Gvanim, which means like different colored pieces. So in other words, the baby, Gvanim means colors, like Gvan means the color. But the Rambam explains it a little differently. You have like little worm-shaped pieces or whatever. The point is there's no actual baby over there. Or if she miscarries a malformed baby that looks like a fish or a locust or shkosim or a masim or creepy crawly creatures, so none of those are considered a vlad, as we'll learn in Beis Hashem and Nida. And in a few months' time, we'll talk about why indeed none of those things are considered a vlad, unlike in the previous Mishnah where she miscarries something that looks like a behemoth chayav oif, where the mayor says it's considered a leida, and the chum say only if it has some of surat adam, with these things not. Rashi mentions, because the Gemara says in Nida, the reason is because only by animals, only by behemah chayav ba'oif, does the Torah use the expression that Hashem created them by yisser, that Hashem then uses the expression yisira, which it does by human beings, by yisser Hashem alekim ba'adam, and by animals, by yisser Hashem alekim ba'adam or chayav ba'adam, etc. It doesn't say such things by fish and chagavim and so forth, and therefore they're in a different class of creatures.
What does it mean?
Because the pasuk says, but it doesn't say, right, so Hashem said, and it happened, but it doesn't say the word by yitzer, it doesn't say the word that Hashem created them. They were created by Hashem's word, but it doesn't use that expression by yitzer, which it does by animals and birds, and which it does by human beings.
So the
implication being, therefore, that Dagim, Chagavim, etc., are considered a completely different order of creatures. So therefore, a baby that looks like one of those is not considered a baby. So if she has such a thing, and later on she has a regular baby, then that's not considered. But the first one was a miscarriage. Or v'hamapelos the yom ha'boyim. Another example would be if the woman miscarries on the 40th day since conception. So up to 40 days, as the Gemara often mentions, is Maya Balmo. The baby is considered just water, so therefore it's not considered to be an actual fetus yet. So in those cases, Habacharayim, the next baby that's born normally, Bechor L'Nachlo L'Krayim, is Bechor as far as the double portion and as far as Kedin HaBeh.
So anything before the 40 days?
Anything before the 40 days doesn't count. And also, even if it's after the 40 days, but it looks like a fish, etc., or it's just a bag full of water, etc., then okay. Now for the last possibility, Yotzeh Dofen B'Achrav. Suppose you have a woman gave birth by C-section, and later on you have another baby came out normally through the womb, through vaginally. Shneim Einem B'Chor Lo L'Nachla Lo L'Koyer. Neither one is a B'Chor as far as Nachla, neither one got the double portion, and neither one is a B'Chor as far as Pidyon HaBen. By the way, the Rambam writes up until modern times, in general, when they did C-sections, the woman usually died from it. So the Rambam writes, we have to be talking about over here about twins, where one of them came out by C-section, and then right afterwards the other one came out vaginally, because it wouldn't have been possible for them to do a C-section and then for her to recover and later on have a second normal pregnancy. Nowadays, of course, such things are possible. Whatever. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, Reb Shimon says no. Harishim l'nachla v'ashen l'chamish sloyim. No. Each one of them is a Bechor in a different sense. Not like Yutanakama says that neither one of these children is a Bechor, not L'Nachla and not L'Toyim. Reb Shimon says, no, the first one is a Bechor as far as getting a double portion, the one who came out by C-section, and the second one who came out vaginally is a Bechor as far as Chomish Tzloyim, as far as Kedin HaBen. So the Gemara says, why does the Tanakhama say in the last case, in this case of Yotzeh Dofen V'Habo Achrav, why does the Tanakhama say that neither of them is a Bechor for any purpose? Rishon L'Nachla Loi, the Tanakhama would say like this. He's not considered the first one as far as getting a double portion, the one who was born by C-section, because the Yoldu Loi Beinin, because the Pasuk said, the Pasuk, when it talks about the double portion, uses the expression the Yoldu Loi, that a man's, and then, okay, in that case, talking about two wives, that they give birth, implying that there had to have been an actual birth, the normal way that a birth is done, vaginally, which is not the case here, because it was by C-section. So nobody's going to get the double portion, right? Everybody's going to get a single portion. Okay, Tosfos has a different understanding of where we're learning it from. Tosfos says what it is because it says the Yoduloi, we make a Xeter, in Nidah, the Gemara talks about, we make a Xeter Shava from this word, the Yoldu, with the expression, the Yolda Zohar, at the beginning of Parshas Tazria, where it talks over there about how the mother is Tomei for 7 or 14 days after the birth, and then as you may Tara for 33 or 66 days, and all of that only applies if the baby was born vaginally. So therefore, Tosfos says that's what the Gemara is implying over here. The fact that it says, the fact that anything else is not considered, so not, Rashi is saying the Yoduloi means that it has to be Derech Leidah. Tosfos is saying that no, the Gemara is basing itself on that Zera Shava, that if it's not vaginally, then it doesn't fit the criteria of that Zera Shava. Therefore, he's not a Bechor as far as that.
What about vaginal, but they took instruments?
But there is actually some discussion about that among Achronim, about, for example, if they use forceps, if they suction out the baby, etc. Yeah, there is quite a bit of discussion about that in Shilas Atrovas from the last 50 or 70 years or so. I believe the consensus of most post-Kim is that you do a Pinyin Aben regular, and even with a bracha, I think you have a minority that hold that maybe you should do it without a bracha because of the solid. I'm not sure if such a thing happens. I guess the Asker of who we follow in practice. But okay. Anyway, so therefore, the baby that was born by C-section is not considered a Bechor L'Nachla because we don't have the V'yolduloi. Again, according to Rashi, the very word V'yolduloi itself means that it has to be Derech Leidah. According to Tosfos, it means it has to fit the Gzeira Shava, that only when the mother is Tomei Leidah, only when the woman is only when the mother is Tomei from the birth, only then is he considered a Bechor L'Nachla, and he or she's not, right? She's not Tomei Leidah at that point. I mean, if blood comes out, then she's vaginally, then she's Tomei for that. But she's not Tomei in and of itself because of the C-section. Right. No, if it comes out, right. Okay, fine. L'chomish sloy nami loy, and why isn't the baby considered, why isn't the first baby, the one born by C-section, why isn't he chayv in Kidin Aben? Because Petzerechem going in, because he has to be Petzerechem, he has to have been the first one to open the womb, meaning normally through the birth canal, and he didn't, because he was born by C-section. Sheni l'machla loy, next, the second baby is not considered a bechor l'machla, the one who was born vaginally, because reishis oyne benin, because the pasuk says that the one who gets a double portion has to be reishis oyne, the first of the father's strength, and here he's not, because he's the second born, and l'chamish sloim nami loy, and he's not a bechor, as far as the five sloim, kasava, because the Tanakama of our Mishnah holds, Bechor, the Dagar Echad Loi Havi Bechor. That if a person is a Bechor only from one point of view, in this case, he's a Bechor as far as that he came out of the womb through the birth canal first, but he's not a Bechor, he wasn't the first one. So therefore, the Tanakhama will say that he's not, that such a child is not considered a Bechor. We actually had that Svara earlier, back in the second Perek, we had a din as far as Bechor Behema Tahara, we had a din over there where you had a similar idea, where you had one was born by C-section and one was born, and then the second one was born vaginally, where the Tarfen said over there that's a Sopik, because he has a Sopik whether Bechor L'Davar Achad is considered a Bechor or not. So Tosfos says, okay, that Reb Shimon over here doesn't necessarily have to be agreeing with Reb Tarfen over there. Reb Shimon can take the view, Reb Shimon could take the view first we're talking about the Chachamim over here, but the Chachamim over here are certain that Bechor L'Davar Echad Loi Havi Bechor. Reb Akiva is also certain over there. Okay, so then where's Reb Shimon over here who says that Bechor L'Davar Echad Havi Bechor? Fine, Reb Tarfin says it's a Sopik, Reb Shimon can say I hold with the Bade. Fine, Reb Shimon is still entitled, he's still a Tana, he's entitled to hold his opinion. So he can say that. Okay. So that explains the Tanakhama. That explains why the Tanakhama would say neither of them is considered a Bechor. There is, by the way, a different point about this. Actually, the Meshech Chochma explains a different idea. Also, we learned a while back that you have when it comes to Bechor Behema Tahora, the pasuk uses the expression, and the pasuk uses the plural Bechorim. So therefore, you can have a case where two animals are each suffix bechor. Even we may have a case. We have a case where they can be bader bechor or points of Yossi if they're both born at the same time. Whereas with human beings, you don't have that. It never says bechorim when it comes in plural. When it comes to bechor adam, therefore, there's for sure only one bechor. Okay. So even if they're both born at the same time, you would say that those, yeah, you wouldn't necessarily say that. So anyway, so Tanakama anyway over here holds that, again, the first one is not a Bechor L'Nachla because there's no B'yoldu. He's not Bechor L'Koyim because no Petra Rechem. The second one is not Bechor L'Nachla because no Reishis Oynoi. And he's not Bechor as far as Pidyon HaBen, even though he is Petra Rechem, because he's only a Bechor L'Dover Echad, and the Tanakama says that's not considered a Bechor. Reb Shimon Omer Harishon L'Nachla V'Asheni L'Chavash Soim. We said in the Mishnah, Reb Shimon says the first one is the Bechor as far as Nachla, the second one is the Bechor as far as Pidyon HaBen. Why? Reb Shimon L'Taimei. So Reb Shimon is going according to his own Svara as far as the C-section. Each one is a Bechor in a different way. So he goes, as far as the one born by C-section, he goes according to his own Svara, the Omer, where he says in the Sugya there in Nida, tailored Larabas Yotze Dofen. He says that when the Pasuk says in the Kaver tailored, the word tailored comes to include even if the baby was born by C-section. Reb Shimon would say you do have Yemei Tumah and you do have Yemei Tahara. Therefore, V'yoldu Loi fits over here. So therefore, he can be considered a Bechor L'Nachma. And Hashem and Chomash Shloim. Why did you say the second one is a Bechor as far as the Pidyon HaBen? Because the Saba Bechor L'Davarach and Havi Bechor. Very simple. Because he holds that a Bechor, that a person can be a Bechor only as far as one aspect. Even though he's not a Bechor as far as having been the first one, as far as having been born first, the fact that he's the first one out of the womb, the normal way, through the birth canal, makes him can be considered a Bechor for Pidyon HaBen according to Reb Shimon.
So the first one was C-section and the other one...
And the other one was vaginal. Then Reb Shimon says that the first one is a Bechor L'Nachla and the second one is a Bechor as far as Pidyon HaBen. The halacha is like the Chachamim, though. Neither one is a Bechor L'Nachla, neither one is a Bechor as far as Pidyon HaBen. Okay. Fine. Mishnah says, Mishla Bikra Ishtoi, if a man had, his wife had never given birth before, the Yolda Shnei Zcharim, and she gives birth to two boys, twins, so he has to give, he gives Pidyon HaBen to the Kohen, because whichever one, even if we don't know which one is first, fine, one of them is definitely a Bechor. So there's no question he's Chayiv in five Slayim then. No, because she didn't have children before, so now one of them is the firstborn. And here's where also the Meshach Chachma says, so even if they were both born at the same time, and we had the discussion earlier, fine, but we could say, when it comes to animals, Rav Yossi would say over there that both of them are considered Bechorim. He held Efshalasamtim. Here we don't have him arguing. And one idea is, because, again, the Meshach Chachma says, it wants to say, the reason is, because by animals, it says Bechorim, which is plural, so you can have two that are considered Bechor. By humans, it doesn't. Therefore, either one or the other is a Bechor. Or whichever one, the father is kind of.
Sure.
No, but that's why he's getting paid. He's getting paid five Shloim, but he can't say that he's, but we can't say both of them are considered a Bechor. Even the Chachamim said over there that only one of the animals is a Bechor as well. But even Rabbi Yossi, who said over there E.F. Shalasamson, or F. Shalasamson rather, and it's possible that both of them came out in the exact same split second. Nevertheless, he doesn't hold in that concept. Nes Echaman B'Sech Shloshim Yom. Suppose now one of these twins died within the first 30 days. Ha'av Potter. So now the father is Potter from Pidyon HaBen because he can say the one that died was the Bechor. So then, and you could. You want to argue otherwise, and you have to bring proof, but he can't. Nes Ha'av Ha'bonim Kayomim. What about the other way around? If the father died and the sons are alive, what happens as far as Pidyon HaBen? Reb Meir Omer, Im Nosnu Ad Shalei Cholku. So Reb Meir says like this: it depends whether they divided the estate or not. If they gave the money for the Pidyon HaBen before the estate was divided, Nosnu, then they gave it. In other words, that's it. They did what they were supposed to do. They fulfilled their chiyuv. The Im Lav Turin. But if not, then they would be potter. When we say over here Abonim Kayamim, we don't mean over here that both. Both children are, well, yeah, we do. Yeah, no, even if both children are still alive. So the mayor says, if the five Shloim were given before the estate was divided, then good, okay, five Shloim had to be given regardless. But if not, the Imlaf Turin, but if not, if they divided the estate, then each of them is potter, because each one can say, I'm not the Bechor. That's Reb Meir. Reb Yehuda Omer Nischayv Nechosim. Reb Yehuda says no. You have a chiyuv on the nechosim of the father. So therefore, between the two of them, they have to pay. So it's not each one can say I'm potter. we say as between the two of them, it has to be paid. Did you want a half? One of you is going to give 2.5, and the other is going to give 2.5. Fine, but it has to be paid. Okay. Zohar Nakeva, on the other hand, if the mother gave birth to twins, a boy and a girl, Ein Kan L'Kohen Klum, then the Kohen doesn't get anything, because then we can say that the girl was born first. And again, I'm with Mechaber Levarayim. Again, it would probably be subject to the same machlokas as before. Do you actually have to set aside the 5 sloyim if you're able to keep it on the grounds of Amos Mechaber Levaraya, or maybe would you not even have to set it aside at all? Okay. So the Gemara asks, in the first case of the, in the middle case of the Mishnah, so again, we had that, we have that if the father dies and the children are still alive, so we said Reb Meir is saying that once the estate is divided, neither one has to pay because each one can say, I'm not the Bechor. And Reb Yehuda says there's a Chiyuv Amun Chosim, so we have to figure out, Dimitzahav Amos. When did the father die? Elam Dimitzahach Alamad Yoim. If you're going to say that the case is the father died after the children are already 30 days old or over, what do you mean? Baha'am or Rameo Kichoku Pturin? Then why? How in that case would Rameo say that if they divided the estate, they should be Potter? Baha'i Shabun Lahu the Nechosim. Don't you have already a Shibud on the Nechosim at that point? Once 30 days comes, he's obligated to pidyon on Ben. From then on, you have an ongoing Chiyuv on the Nechosim. So therefore, okay, he died, and okay, they split up the estate. Still, there was an outstanding shibud, there was an outstanding lien on the estate for 5 sloyim. So why for the pidyon haben? So why shouldn't they have to pay it, even if they divided it already? It doesn't matter whether the kohen asks. The fact is, they still have a chiyuv. There's no particular kohen who has standing for it anyway, because they can always say, I wanted to give it to a different kohen. Fine, but the point is that the So now. This that we're saying that there's a shibud, it means that we're taking for granted a couple of points which we're going to be discussing in the sugya over here. So this is kind of a throwback to the Babas, to Baba Basra, in particular where we're talking about dinim of shibud. We're talking about shibud on nechassim in general, but. Right now, Tosfos points out, for purposes of discussion, we are assuming two things. First of all, we're assuming that when they split up the estate, they're considered to be heirs rather than purchasers. If we consider them to be buyers, then we would say there's no shibud on metalkalim. There is later on, from Tachon of Gaonim, but not originally. So it has to be if we consider them heirs, number one, or it would mean that because this is considered milva haksuva v'torah, it's a debt which is written in the Torah, which we're going to discuss that point a little further in the sugya, we would consider the fact as if it was written in a shtar, and therefore there would be a shibud on them even if they were. I stated it wrong. Okay, if they're yoshim, then it doesn't matter whether the debt was alter or b'shtar, either way there's a shibud on them. If we were to say that it's considered a milval peh, because after all, there's no shtar that was written out saying, I'm chayav 5 sloyim for the kohen. So on the face of it, we would consider it milval peh. One possibility then is we consider the children to be, once they divide the estate, we consider them to be yoshim, and therefore even a milval peh is still binding on them, as opposed to if we consider them lakuchas, if we consider that they bought from each other, then we would say they're not chayav. Or the other possibility is we don't consider this a milva alpeh, we consider this a milva b'shtar. So these are points that we're going to take up because the Torah says that you have to do it. So these are points, the 5 points. So these are points that we're going to take up in the Gemara. Right now, the Gemara is assuming one or the other of those points, and therefore the Gemara is taking it as a given that you have a shibud. So again, if the father died after 30 days, then why would Rameh say once he split the estate, then they're potter? So obviously we have to be talking about the father died within the 30 days, but then the question is still why is Reb Meir making a distinction? So why is it different? Reb Meir is saying that both of them are potter once they divided the estate, and the reason why they're potter because if the kohen goes to one of the children, then the son can, that child can push him off and saying, I'm not the bechor. And he try to go to the other one, he could also push him off and saying, I'm not the bechor. Well, if we're gonna say like that, kile chok unami. So what? So if they didn't split up the estate, how is it any different? Same thing. The Kohen should be able to go to either one, even if they didn't divide the estate. And look, the father was not yet chayiv of anything because he died before 30 days old. He's only being toda. He only wants to take away because of the children. And each one can say, look, I'm not the b'chor. What do you want from me? So what is it? What's the difference? According to them, if we're talking that the father died within the 30 days, then why would there be a difference whether they split the estate or not? Why is your mayor making that distinction? No, because there was no shibud on the father yet, because the father died within 30 days. Yeah. The answer is, Amar Rabbi Yumi is Zois Eimeres. So Rabbi Yumi says, from this Mishnah, we can learn a din as follows. Shnei Yosef ben Shimon, Shehoyu Be'ir Achas. Suppose you have two people of the same name living in the same city. Their names are Yosef ben Shimon, which is the Gemara's example of typical names. So now you have some other person has a shtar chayiv that says that Yosef ben Shimon owes him X amount of money. And like this, each one would be able to tell him, it's not me, it's the other Yosef ben Shimon, so I'm not chayiv to pay you. But suppose that the loch who saw the shut was, suppose that now these two Yosef ben Shimon buy a field in partnership. Now, Baal Chayiv gova oisa mehen. Now the Baal Chayiv is able to take away a part of that field in collection of his debt. Why? The Amale, because he can say to either one, you're right, I don't know which one of you it is, or at least I don't have any proof which one of you it is that owes me the money, but if it's you that I'm owed the money, well then I'm taking your portion, and if it's against your friend, if it's against the other one, then I'm taking his portion. In other words, Rabbi Yumi is saying the same thing in our Mishnah. One of these children is definitely a Bechor. Therefore, the Kohen has the ability, before the estate is split up, according to the mayor, the Kohen has the ability to go to them and say, look, it's true we don't know which one of you is the Bechor. However, one of you definitely is. Either way, I'm owed 5 shloim over here because one of you is a Bechor. Therefore, I'm entitled to take it. Whichever one of your halves it ends up coming out of, that's not my problem. No, within 30 days, we're talking about. If he died after 30 days, then for sure he's chayav. Because there is, because ultimately, once they reach 30 days old, then a chiyuv kicks in. No. In general, okay, Pidyon HaBen is one of those mitzvahs where, yes, the father is supposed to do it for the son, but if it wasn't done, the son has his own chiyuv to do it. You're right. There's a discussion among Achronim. Is it that we're saying you have the chiyuv is on the father, and if the father is not available or doesn't do it or whatever, then it devolves on the son, or is it a new chiyuv on the son? But whatever, that's a lomdisha detail over there.
In the partnership, there's one reshus, and this is two reshus.
What do you mean there's two reshus? They didn't split up the estate yet. It's all one reshus.
No, the estate of the father.
No, but that's what we're talking about. They're still managing it jointly. They haven't divided it yet. So therefore, it's all still one thing. It's the equivalent of a field that they're owning in partnership. So therefore, sort of Yumi says, you see from this Mishnah that din would be true. Okay, you have actually the Shach and the Nesivis talk about, I mean, how does that work after all? I mean, if this Baal Chayiv comes and takes away half the field, for example, because it's a partnership, ultimately it means the other one is going to be absorbing half the loss also. What are we doing about that? Yes, but the Nesivis has a long discussion about why that works anyway, basically because the Baal Chayiv can say that's not my problem. But yeah, okay, fine. Okay, so that's Rabbi Yumi's din. However, Rava says that doesn't really work. Mechti, let's consider. Nechosi debar inish inun arvin bay. After all, we say the nechosim of a person are his guarantors. That's what a debt is paid out of. And we know in the dinim of Ariv, mi ikamidi dilididele mati tovale. Where do we ever have a case that you're not able to get from the loiva himself? From the Baal Chayiv himself, or the Arev Masi Tavile, but you're able to go and collect the debt from the Arev. V'hatsnan, we learn in a Mishnah in Baba Basra. It doesn't work that way. Hamalves chaver alidei Arev. If you lend a person by means of an Arev, lo yiparam in an Arev, you're not allowed to make the Arev pay you back. And what does that mean? V'kaimalon, we explain in the Gemara over there, doesn't mean at all. The whole point of an Arev is that he's going to pay if the loiva doesn't. But we explain in the Gemara over there, it means the lo yitbam in an Arev chila. It means you can't sue the Arev first. First, you have to sue the loiva. If the loiva doesn't have what to pay, then you go to the Arev. Which the Gemara points if the loiva defaults, then you go to the Arev. Okay, we talk about it over there, different ones. An Arev kablon, but okay, the nechosim on an Arev kablon. So therefore, Rava is saying, If we consider the reason why you're able to collect from a person's property is from the din of adrevus, then you have to go to the lawyer first. So in this case over here, there's no chiyuv on either child individually, because each one can say, I'm not the bechor. The same thing, there's no chiyuv individually on either of these Yosef and Shimon, because each one of them can say that I'm not the one who owes you the money. It's only, we're saying, because there's joint property, that you, Rabbi Yirmi, are saying we can collect from that joint property. Fine, but the only reason you can collect from that joint property is based on the dinim of Arev. But you can't go to the Arev unless you go to the loiver first. And if you go to the loiver first, he says, I don't owe you the money. So how do you have the ability to collect from the property in that case? El Omar Rava, the Rava says no.
Really, when you have a loiver and an Arev, they're both separate.
Fine.
They're not the same, but they're both separate.
Okay, the fact remains, though, you have a concept that in our halachas, and by the way, the Gemara mentions in some places that the goyim had different, laws.
Right.
They allow you to go to the Arev first, but I don't know if in American law it's like that, but whatever. The point is, in halacha, you have to go to the loiver first. Only if the loiver can't pay up, then you go to the arev. Over here, if you go to the loiver, then you don't have a leg to stand on to collect, so therefore you can't go to the arev.
Why can't you say you go to one, in our case here, you go to one, and let that one afterwards turn against the other?
Because the first one can say, I'm not the one who necessarily owes you the money. You want to collect from me, I'm going to make a veil of an ayah. Okay. El Omar Rava. So Rava says no. The reason we have to explain Rav Meir's opinion in our mission as follows. No. Let's go back. We thought that it can't be the father died after 30 days because we said there's a shibud on the property once 30 days come. Rava says not necessarily. Let's revisit that. Let's say we're talking the father died after 30 days.
Which is impossible before.
Before we were saying that not, but now yeah. The idea, it can nichti tuva. So Rava says like this. If there are a lot of nechasim available, in other words, there's enough to be able to pay the five tloyim, no problem, and you have other property left over, then hachinam yishaklu. Then indeed, the koyin would have the right to take it, even if they split up the estate. Because again, you had a shibud while the father was alive. But the case we have to be talking about over here is where the whole estate comes out to only five tloyim. Now, let's say, because we're going to figure out. Now, let's say, for purposes of discussion, that Udkula Alma Islahu Dirabasi. Let's say now that both Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda in our Mishnah hold of Rav Asi's din. The Amr Rav Asi, Ha'achin Shecholku, Mechta Yoshin, Mechta Lakomas. Rav Asi says that when brothers split up the estate, they're considered half heirs and half buyers. Basically, because we have a question about Breira. If we say yesh brera, if we say that once they each get their portion, then it shows retroactively that was destined to be their portion, then we should consider them yoshim. If we say ein brera, then we would say they're considered like buyers. Because we're not sure, therefore we consider them in half like heirs and half like buyers. Now, furthermore, so let's assume that both Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda agree with that concept. No, in other words, half of what they got is considered that they bought it, and the other half is considered like they inherited it. Furthermore, Udekule Alma, now let's also say that both Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda both agree, Milvach Suva Batura, Lav Kiksuva Bashtar Gamma. Let's say that they both agree that if you have a loan written in the Torah, it's not considered like it's written in a Shtar. It's considered a Milva Alpeh. Now, what do you mean a milvach suva b'tora? Rashi says, just because the Torah tells us that the Kohen is entitled to five swines, that's considered suva b'tora. Tosfos has a little bit of a discussion here and longer discussions elsewhere Tosfos says, I mean, the fact is every time you lend money, the Torah tells you have to pay it back. But the difference is, Tosfos says that when you're chayiv in it only because the Torah was mechayiv you in it. Elsewhere, Tosfos talks about it. Well, in the case of, let's say, a regular loan, you're chayiv in it because you yourself agreed to pay back that money. You were talking about it didn't depend on your agreement. The Torah is mechayiv you in it. Okay, yeah, but elsewhere, Tosfos talks about slightly differently, because after all, for example, Erchin is also a person says only when a person declares that he's going to give an Erech does he become chayiv in it. So isn't it the same as alone in that regard? So elsewhere, Tosfos talks about, but no, the difference is, milvach suvav Torah means when the Torah mentions an actual amount you have to pay, like in this case, 5 sloyim, or in the case of Erchin, anywhere between 3 and 50 sloyim, depending. So that's considered, so either way, whatever, let's say then that even though it's written in the Torah, even though the Torah says you have to pay it, even though in this case it doesn't even depend on anything that you did, even though the Torah fixes an amount, let's say that it's not considered like it's written in a shtar, let's say that it's considered a milvah alpeh. Now, one more detail we need. Udkule alma islu derapah. So let's also say then that Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir both agree on another statement, what Rabbi Papa says. D'amar Papa, milvah alpeh gozim in ayoshin ve'en a gozim in alakufus. That when you have an oral loan that wasn't written down in a shtar, you can only collect from yoshin. You cannot collect from buyers. So let's assume that Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda both agree on these three facts. Let's say they both agree on these three facts. Number one, that the brothers are, that half of what each brother got is considered that he bought it, and half is considered that he inherited it. So therefore, in other words, there was only 5 sloyim. The entire estate was only 5 sloyim. So therefore, each one got 2.5. Each one got 2.5. So we're saying it's considered that in aggregate 2.5 was inherited and 2.5 was bought from each other. Then we're going to say, second of all, we're going to say that it's only a milvah alpeh, that's 5 sloyim that's owed. And 3, we're going to say that only as yoshim would they be obligated to pay that, not as lefufas. So therefore, what's the machlokas? V'hocha b'chamish v'loy b'chatzi chamish. The machlokas in our Mishnah, therefore, is when the Torah says that they have to give 5 sloyim to the kohen, that you have to give 5 sloyim to the kohen for a bechor, does it mean what would be the din? What would be the din as far as giving half of that? Did Rav Meir saw the chomish v'lei chatzi chomish? Rav Meir says the chiyuv is only when you're giving 5, not when you're giving less than 5. So therefore, in other words, Rav Meir would say that out of the 5 sloyim that they inherited in total, only 2.5 of it has a shibud to this, because only 2.5 of it did they inherit as yoshim, and that is subject to a shibud for a milvah alpeh. The other half is not, because it's considered that they bought it, and buyers are not chayiv for a milvah alpeh. Therefore, Rav Meir says, in other words, in a regular case, leaving aside the case of our Mishnah a second, if Reuven borrows money from Shimon without there being a shtar, then later on Reuven sells his property to Levi, there's no shibud on Levi. There's a shibud on Levi only if there was a shtar. Milvah alpeh. Now, it doesn't create a shibud, right? It creates a shibud on Yoshim, not on the Kochus, we're saying it. So if we say that, and so it comes out then there's a shibud only on 2.5 sloyim out of the 5. And Rav Meir is saying that in that case, then you don't have. The Torah is telling you only have to pay 5 sloyim, not less than that. So therefore, if they split the estate, then they're potter. If they didn't split the estate, fine, then you have 5 sloyim over there. They're not yoshim or lekuchas yet, because you still have the complete 5 sloyim is still the undivided estate. Sure, then you have still have a shibud on it, because it's because the father died after 30 days. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda says, no, when the Torah tells us you have to pay 5 sloyim, it means, and if you don't have 5 sloyim, then you pay whatever you have. So therefore, he takes the half, and he takes the half that's Yerusha. Fine, he can't take the half that's considered bought, but he can take the other half, and that's enough. So that's what Rabbi Yehuda means when he says in our Mishnah, Nitzchayv Nechosim, that the Nechosim Achayim, he means, in other words, that the Kohen is entitled to take half of the Nechosim.
Regardless of the amount.
Up to 5 sloyim. Yeah. Okay, the question is, if that's the meaning of the machlokes, ihachi, Rabbi Yehuda omen eschayv on nechosim, then why is Rabbi Yehuda using the expression that there's a chiyuv on the nechosim? Chayev gavram, mischayev gavram, by the way, the expression in the Mishnah should be that the person was chayev, because according to Rabbi Yehuda, the fundamental thing is that the person himself is chayev. So Rashi makes a point over here. Now the gears that we have in front of us, nischayev gavra, and then Hagoy Tabach changes it to chayev gavra. Rashi says that's the correct gears, because chayev gavra means, in other words, Rabbi Yehuda should say that no, they are chayev because they're not completely potter. They're chayev altogether for 2.5 sloyim. Nischayvu hanachosim implies that there's a chiyuv on the nachosim that we're talking about. In other words, the father died after 30 days, and now we said they split the estate, and we're saying that Rabbi Yehuda is saying that they're chayev, but it's not the nechosim aren't really chayev. The people are chayev. Each of them is chayev to give half of the amount. And besides that, we can't say it that way anyway, because Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Rabbi Yehuda, ha'achan shecholku, when the brothers split up the estate, and again, we're talking about our case, where both of them are sotik b'chor, im yesh asara zuz v'zeh v'asara zuz v'zeh, if each one inherited 10 zuz, there's 4 zuz in a sela, so it means each one inherited 2.5 zuz, so that's the case we're talking about, where altogether the total estate was 5 zuz. Chayovin, then they're chayev to pay. The imlav turin, and if not, then they're potter. Well, meaning that if they have less than that, then they'd be potter. So what do we mean by that? My asara zuzel zev, asara zuzel zev. What do we mean? What happened over here? Ilema ben di erusha ben de lakuchas. Or do you mean that the total amount that each one inherited was only 10 zuz? The total estate was only 20 zuz, and each of them got 10 of it. And ben di erusha ben de lakuchas. So now, when we consider each of them got 10 zuz, and we're saying according to the assumptions that we started with before, each of them is considered to have 5 zuz that they inherited and 5 zuz that they bought from the other one. And well, if you're going to say b'chomesh v'asibu chasi chomesh, and you're going to say, as we said before, that five zuz that they inherited and 5 that they bought. So if we take that view. And if we said that Rabbi Yehuda says b'chomesh v'afidu chatzi chomesh, that Rabbi Yehuda says it doesn't matter, even if the kohen is not able to collect the whole 5 tzloim, he still can collect whatever he can. Well then, ihochi mai iri asara. Then why is Rabbi Yehuda mentioning the case where they each inherited 10 zuzim? Afilu botim asara nami. The same thing would be true if they inherited less than that. Let's say they each inherited 2 zuzim. Same thing. You would say then each one is obligated to give 1 zuz to the kohen. Why is Rabbi Yehuda mentioning it specifically in the case where they each inherited 10? So obviously when we say each one got 10 zuz, we don't mean that's the actual amount they got. We mean each one has 10 that they're considered to be a yorush of. Each one got 20 zuz. Altogether the estate came out to 40 zuz. There's a 40 zuz, which is equal to 10 zuz. Each one of them got 5 tzloim. We're saying each one of them then is considered that they have 2.5 that they yaushin, 2.5 that they bought. Well, in that case, obviously Rabbi Yehuda holds chomesh v'lei chasi chomesh. Only when you have that altogether the koyin stands to get 5 tzloim, only then is he entitled to collect, but not any less than that. That's why Rabbi Yehuda mentions where each of them yaushin 10 tzloim, meaning they also effectively, not tzloim, zuzim, and they also effectively bought 10 more from each other. So only in that case would Rabbi Yehuda say tzayim. So you can't say, in other words, that Rabbi Yehuda holds chomesh v'afidu chasi chomesh, because in that case, the kohen would be entitled to collect no matter what the size of the estate. The fact that Rabbi Yehuda is mentioning a minimum size here implies that he holds that, no, it's either the kohen collects 5 tzloim or nothing. There's no in-between. Okay. So the Gemara says, Ella, you're right. Fine. We have to explain differently. Dekula alma chomesh v'afidu chasi chomesh. That doesn't work. Okay, so Ela Dekula Alma Chomesh Valei Chatzi Chomesh. No, so we'll say it like this. Everybody would agree that when it says the Kohen is entitled to 5 tzloim, means 5, not less than 5. If you have, the estate is less than 5, then you can't collect it all. We can say, therefore, the Machlokes in our Mishnah, we assumed before that everybody agrees with Rav Asi did, that when the brothers divide the estate, they're considered half Yosh and half Rapapas. We said they all agree with Rapapas din that a milval peh can only be collected from Yosh, not from Rapapas. Let's say they're arguing on one or the other of those points. So we can say they're arguing on Rav Asi's point, for example, that we can say that the, so we can say that that not necessarily that. So for example, we could say Reb Meir holds a Reb Achi's din and a Republic din, and therefore he would say the whole estate amounted to only five. There and Chomish v'loy chatzi Chomish. Therefore, the Kohen doesn't collect at all. Reb Yehuda could say, fine, I agree with Reb Asi that they're half buyers and half Yoshim, but I disagree with the Papa. I say that a milval pay you could collect from the Kochus. Okay, well, it doesn't matter whether they're Yoshim or the Kochus or not. Either way, the Kohen is entitled to the full amount from each one of them, 2.5 from each one, 5 total. We could say even a milval pay can collect from the Kochus. He doesn't have to agree with the Papa's din. Or we could say the other way around. We could say that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't have to agree with Rabbi Asi's din. Rabbi Asi said they're half Lakochas, half Yoshim. Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah could say, I don't have to agree with Rabbi Asi. I hold they're all Yoshim. Okay, well then in that case, the Kohen's entitled to take everything from the Yoshim. So we can understand the Machlokas that. So therefore, in other words, what it comes out is right. We have that way also of understanding the machlokas of Reb Meir and Reb Yehuda. We don't have to say they're arguing on chomish and veloy chatzi chomish. We can say they agree on that basic point. Therefore, there does have to be a minimum size of an estate for there to even be a question. But the question is basically whether do we consider them half Yoshim and half Lakochos or not? Or even if we do, do we say that you can collect only from Yoshim, that they can collect only from Yoshim, not from Lakochos? Okay. All of that is one way, all of that is one version of the discussion. The discussion thus far was focusing mainly on Reb Meir's opinion in our Mishnah. We said Reb Meir had made a distinction whether the estate was divided or not. So that's why Reb Meir would make a distinction whether they divided the estate or not. Because once they divide the estate, you get into the issue, are they considered Yoshim or are they considered buyers?
Reb Meir would agree
with Reb Asi that they're half buyers, half Yoshim.
Right.
And therefore he would say the Kohen's only entitled to collect half of the estate, and since half of the estate from each one amounts to less than 5 sloyim, then he can't collect.
The Kohen collects only from the...
Because he collects only from the Yoshim. Right. So far we were focusing mainly on Reb Meir. Now, the Ika Demasni La'yah Sefer, there are others who learn this whole discussion as referring to the Sefer, which is Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, Nishaibu HaNechotim, where Rabbi Yehuda had said that the Nechotim have been obligated, and therefore that the 5 sloyim must be paid either way. So let's start the discussion again. Demisa Ab Amos, when in this scenario did the father die? Elema Demisa Achashloshim, are we talking about the father died after boys are 30 days old? So what does that mean? The cloud that a mayor saw the Kicholtiv Turin. So the implication is that a mayor would say in that case, the father died after 30 days. Then if they divided the estate, their father, why? How is Shabbul Nisi? Don't you have a Shibud on the Nechotim when 30 days comes? So if we're talking about that Rabbi Yehuda and therefore the mayor, it has to be during, if he died during the 30 days, then if they divided the estate, why is Rabbi Yehuda being Machayev then? As we said before, why can't the Kohen go to either one, whichever one the Kohen goes to, they can tell him, go away, I'm not the one who's Chayev. Rabbi Yirmiyah says, from the Sefer of the Mishnah, we can derive the same din as before. Zosen Meres, Shnei Yosef and Shimon Shoyu Birachas. If you have two Yosef and Shimons in one city, the Lokach Echamam Sodom Echaveri, and one, here a little bit different than before, one of them bought a field from the other. The previous case was they're both partners. Now we're saying one of them bought a field from the other, Baal Chov, Govim Menu. Either way, the Baal Chov is able to collect from that field, says Rabbi Yirmiyah. The Omalei, because again, the Baal Chov can say, Ibidi Doch Masikna, If you're the one who owes me the money, manosid yidach kal shakilna, that I'm taking your property in satisfaction of the debt, the ibachavrach masikna, and if it was actually the other guy that owed me the money, okay, mishtabdali mekamid yidach, okay, my shibud precedes yours, because I lent him the money before you bought the field. So therefore, same thing over here. In other words, Rabbi Yehuda would say over here that since there was already a shibud on the property, since there was already a shibud on the property that begins when the boys are 30 days old, then therefore the Kohen has the ability to go to them and say one way or the other, even if you divide the estate, I'm still entitled to it on the grounds of one of the other. Again, Amar Rava. Rava has the same objection as in the first version. After all, a person's property is is his Orev, is his guarantor, and we said before, you can't collect from the Orev unless you're able to collect from, unless you try first collecting from the Loiva, and here he can't. And the rest of the discussion continues as in the first version. The rest of the discussion continues where Rava offers his explanation that the argument is on the, that the argument is, do we accept, the argument is, do we say chomish for lechasi chomish, or we say we can't understand it that way. We have to say that they're arguing about all the brothers considered Yoshim or Lekochas, or can we collect from Yoshim versus from Lekochas, etc. Same as in the first version.
And that leads us to what?
So that leads us in the end to the same conclusion as before, that the argument between Reb Meir and Reb Yehuda is either, do we say, either that Reb Meir holds of Reb Asi's and Reb Papa's din, and Reb Yehuda does not, argues as one or the other of them. Rav Asi's din that they're considered half Yoshim, half Lekochas. Rav Papa's din that you can collect a milval pair only from Yoshim, not from Lekochas.
Right.
Or the other way around, so which is that he could disagree with Rav Asi and say they're considered all Yoshim, and therefore you can collect from all Yoshim. So the same as the first Lashon comes out in the end. As far as halacha, the Rambam and the Mechaber paskin like the first version of the Gemara over here. Because the Ketzik Mishnah has a long discussion. I mean, mainly we were focusing on Reb Meir's opinion, but nevertheless we can deduce from it Reb Yehuda's opinion. And we would say because the first version of the discussion over here was very, very logical. We went through figuring out over here what so even though usually in the Gemara the halacha is like the second lashon, they say nevertheless the Rambam passes like the first lashon because it comes out the Rambam and then the Mechaber follow that. There's a tour argues. The tour argues with that, and the tour says maybe the halacha is actually like the second lashon. Yeah, like the second lashon, which would mean therefore that in the first version was saying that the case is that the father died after the Rambam actually writes it that it really doesn't matter whether the father dies before or after 30 days. Either way, you have a shibud on the mechotzim, like Rabbi Yehuda says. According to the second version, we would say there's a difference whether he died before 30 days or after.